Good morning. We'll call the Property Tax and Local Sales Tax Division to order. And there's a little change in the agenda. We're going to hear House File 488 first, and then we'll head on to the rest of the agenda. And also, House File 101 and House File number 684 have been removed from the agenda. So we just have four bills today. We don't have a quorum yet, so even if the quorum comes after you've presented your bill, we will then, the motion will be to move this bill for possible inclusion into the Property Tax Division report. So, thank you, Mr. Representative Coles. If you would explain House File 488.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. And Mr. Chair, when you do get a quorum, there is a slight technical amendment that Ms. Dalton has drafted to make sure that we capture the right city. So when you get a quorum, if you'd be willing to move that to get the bill in the shape that I'd like it to move forward, and I would appreciate it.
We will do that. Representative Coles, I think that mainly moves from a 300% increase to a 200% increase in population over the next period of time.
That's correct.
That's small. Very good.
That's correct, and I appreciate Ms. Dalton catching that. Mr. Chair and members, I will be brief and then allow Luann Murphy, the City Administrator from the City of Mayor, to provide some brief testimony. But as Ms. Murphy will explain, the City of Mayor has had some unique circumstances that I believe warrants, a fix or some additional LGA. As we all know, as we have the discussions around here on a regular basis, local government aid is intended to provide cities with the ability to, number one, provide some property tax relief, and number two, help pay for essential services that they may not have the tax capacity to otherwise pay for. As Ms. Murphy can explain better than I can, the City of Mayor has, because of its geography and because of some state mandates and state actions, has found itself in a unique and unfortunate situation over the last several years of some real challenges. State road construction, compliance with state mandates, and proximity to Job Z, and an inability to attract commercial development that is happening just a few miles away create I think a unique situation. I'm going to stop here, Mr. Chair, unless you have questions. I'd like Ms. Murphy to provide some testimony. I also have with me Councilmember Taylor from the City Council. There is a City Council resolution requesting requesting that should be in your packets, along with a letter from the Mayor, who was reelected back in November. The letter came is dated before the election, but he was reelected, and so he's still there and still supportive. Mr. Chairman, with that, I'd ask Ms. Murphy to provide the testimony.
Thank you, Representative Coles. If you'd please welcome to the committee. If you'd please state your name.
Thank you. My name is Luann Murphy. I'm the City Administrator for the City of Mayor, Minnesota. I want to thank you, Chairperson Markford, and the Property and Tax Committee members for allowing me to take time to tell the City of Mayor's story. The City of Mayor is a small city in western Carver County, which was incorporated in 1886. The city is a growing community with a current population of about 1,842, and we're on the fringe of the seven-county metro area. I am here today on behalf of the city to request an increase in local government aid. I want to talk to you a little bit about the state mandates and the impediments that the city has faced in an attempt to increase our tax base. First, the city has been paralyzed by road construction for 3 years. In 2006, State Highway 25 was detoured for a mill and overlay from Buffalo to Belle Plaine. In 2007, there was a major reconstruction of State Highway 25, five blocks through the downtown of Mayor. And in 2008, if any of you are aware or not, of the major shutdown of Highway 7 from St. Bonifacius to Hutchinson, which took the whole summer for reconstruction. The city has not been able to expand its commercial and industrial tax base, one, because of some of the road construction that has gone on, but also because of Job Z. Job Z may help other cities, but it creates a problem when a city is so close to a Job Z city. The City of Mayor, with its location on the fringe of the metro area, has had to compete with Job Z in neighboring cities. For example, the City of Winsted, which is 13 miles from the City of Mayor, has been able to grow their commercial and industrial tax base with the aid of Job Z by $2.5 million. Businesses just pass the City of Mayor and go the 13 miles to reap all the benefits of Job Z. Again, this creates potential limits to our potential commercial and industrial growth which limits our ability to be able to expand our tax base. Now that the city has been hit with a downturn in the housing market and the extensive debt that was needed to build the infrastructure according to state requirements, with the nearby cities in the Jobs V program and the state road construction, the city is in need of assistance from the state. The current LGA program is intended to reduce the disparities between cities and townships in revenues and taxable wealth, to compensate cities for overburden, and to provide an alternative to property tax or revenue diversification for cities. The LGA formula affects different communities in different ways, and in some cities the formula provides them with sufficient revenue to provide the necessary services. The city, in part of our growth too, I want to back up just a little bit, is that we were required to extend our wastewater treatment facility. And we were required to make that a Class A facility to treat for phosphorus, which is a state requirement. That added $5 million to the city in debt. We also were required to upgrade our water treatment facility, and we had to treat for chlorine, and we had to treat for copper. That facility cost the city $2.7 million to construct. So now we count on revenues coming in from growth, which we're not getting, but these were state requirements. And so that's kind of the things why the city is here to request additional local government aid. In the past, the legislature has had the ability to realize that the formula isn't completely fair and made adjustments to cities with unique needs. I make the argument that the city of Mayer has unique needs, being close to the Job Z, because of the road construction, and because of the state requirements for the expansion of our water and wastewater treatment facilities. We have unique circumstances, again, and we're requesting additional local government aid. The city would appreciate your assistance in securing or assisting us on getting some additional local government aid, and I will stand for questions. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Ms. Murphy. Just one quick question, and I could have looked this up, but how much local government aid is the city receiving right now or certified for this year?
For this year, the city of Mayer received 100, well, for 2008, we had 158,000.
Okay.
112. For 2009, if under the governor's proposal, we'll see a reduction of about 76,000, but we did get an additional. So I think we were supposed to get about 280,000, so we will be just at the 200. But when you look at other cities of comparable size, the city of Mayer does not receive the same amount that other cities of comparable size and characteristics do. So again, I make the argument about the formula.
And that's not being fair, and I know that's an argument we do talk about that quite a bit. So.
And Mr. Chairman, I would never want to be accused of pitting cities in my own legislative district against one another. However, I would concur with what Ms. Murphy is saying. I have cities within my own legislative district that are similar in size, relatively similar in capacity, and they're treated significantly different under the formula. As Ms. Murphy mentioned, the legislature has, on occasion, provided special relief to cities. I know that there was at least one or maybe two in last year's bill, and there were a number of proposals to do this. So this isn't a unique request. They're not always granted. We recognize that, and we appreciate anything that you and the committee may be willing to do to try to help out. I think Ms. Murphy did a nice job explaining the unique circumstances that Mayor finds herself in.
And Representative Cole, you are exactly right. We do have exceptions. In fact, last year, there might have been, last couple years, four or so, as it seemed to me, there was...
Taylor Falls,
Brown Valley.
Mm-hmm.
Very good.
Where's Brown Valley, Mr. Chairman?
We'll move on. And I see this is also a request is for 5 years. And so not a permanent, but for 5 years. So. Very good. Did Councilmember Taylor want to make some comments, or are you here just to answer questions if need be?
I could probably answer questions. I think she covered it pretty well.
Very good.
We discussed this quite regularly in our council meetings.
Okay, and we have a forum now. Let's do some of the, we're going to, Representative Scott, would you like to move that House File 488 be moved and for possible inclusion into the Property Tax Division report?
House File 488.
Thank you very much. And then we also have an amendment. Representative Scott moves approval of the A1 amendment.
Any discussion on that? If not, we'll vote on Rule 1 Amendment. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed say nay. The amendment is adopted. Any questions for Representative Coles or testifiers? If not, is there anyone in the audience that would care to testify for or against House File 488? Seeing none, Representative Coles, any last comments you care to make?
No, Mr. Chair, I just appreciate your time and the committee's time and your consideration.
Thank you very much. Representative Scott renews her motion to move that this be, what am I, laid over is what I was trying to say, for possible inclusion into the division report. So thank you very much.
Chairman and members.
Yep, thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Murphy and Councilmember Taylor. We are now going to move to House File 349, and we have Representative Kapp here. If you would care to come forward. Do we hear anyone that would like to move this bill? Representative Mallory moves House File 349, laid over for possible inclusion into the Property Tax Division report. Welcome, first time to the committee, and
thank you, Mr. Chair and members.
Good seeing you, and please present your bill.
This is a pretty straightforward bill that's just taking a look at the authorizing of a transfer of sales and use tax proceeds from what was previously designated and moving it into a different project, which has definite full-fledged support within all entities in our area, the city of Owatonna, and will be put to wise use then to help our city. I have here with me our city administrator, Chris Bilsey, and I have our city planner, Dave Strand. And I'll pass it over to her to give you, Ms. Bussey, to give you a little bit of information about it and open up to any questions.
Very good. If you would please state your name.
Chairman McCurley.
Oh, I'm sorry. Representative Garofalo.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative, is this your first time to the committee?
Yes, it is.
Registry.
And I apologize, Mr. Garofalo. I left him up in my office. So we'll make sure that we
can Representative Garofalo.
Where are the streets?
I think it is a very straightforward question that Representative Garofalo has asked here, Representative Kapp. And
did you bring streets or not?
Did you bring streets or not?
I did not.
Representative Garofalo, this is as much controversy as I've had all year. Representative Garofalo.
I'm going to move that we table House File.
There's a motion to table. Representative Kapp, you didn't get the memo.
And I think Garofalo's LA needs to be up to date on that a little bit more, that if that was a requirement, that I'd like to hear about that.
So it's my
Representative Scott.
Mr. Chair, I'd like to remind you that one of the people that taught us part of what we know at Festival Orientation was the man making the accusation right here.
Mr. Chairman,
Representative Garofalo, did you mention that in orientation? Maybe there is a malfeasance of some of what you were doing during that orientation that we need to address.
Mr. Chairman, because I'm a generous guy and I want to be bipartisan, I'm going to let it slide this time.
Oh, there you go. All right,
this one.
So you withdraw your motion?
I withdraw it.
All right, very good. Very good. All right, thank you very much. If you would please state your name and we'll proceed.
Thank you. My name is Chris Bussey. I'm the city administrator for the city of Owatonna. Thank you for your time today, Mr. Chair and committee members. Our request is very simple. Our recent developments and traffic patterns have now clearly indicated the need to shift our project. We have support from Steele County Board, our Township Board, MnDOT, and our Chamber of Commerce. I believe that's included in the packet that you have before you. We've had a public hearing on this matter as well, and we received no negative comments. My community development director, David Strand, is here to answer any other detailed questions or any of the history before you, but it's just very reasonable that we need to shift our sales tax project to 18th Street Southwest.
Thank you. And Ms. Wolfstein, is that correct?
Wolfstein. Yeah.
Okay. Sorry about that. All right. Looking at the map, I mean, it looks like, it was for Alexander Drive at one time, and it looks, now you're moving it
six-tenths of a mile.
Six-tenths, which, you already have the right-of-way, and it seems to be a cleaner project if you can do that. Why create another new road? What was the original cost for the Alexander Drive extension? I think it's the $4.5 million roughly that you can spend on transportation projects that were identified in a resolution and a map that came before. But I mean, I presume the construction of Alexander Drive would be greater than what it's going to cost now to do that, and I just wondered, and it's $1.5 million you're looking to transfer there. Was there more money initially that was put in for that portion, or was it still 1.5, even though it might have cost more to do the project, still 1.5 out of the proceeds of this sales tax? If Mr. Strand, if you can...
Mr. Chair, the another thing that happened, too, it was becoming evident that the cost of constructing the existing alignment to the Lamont Street was going to be far greater than originally intended. Property acquisition has risen with land values, obviously, than even the past few years. They may be going down now, but they have risen to a new level. Also, as we did a little more engineering, we found that there were some very extremely wet areas and porous soils on Lamont Street intended right-of-way that would have added extensive cost to the project also. So looking at the existing right-of-way of 18th Street became far, far more economical for us to pursue.
And also, Mr. Strand, this is going to be, there's an agreement by the township that if this is approved, that this would be annexed to the city. Is that correct?
That's correct. We even included the language in their resolution of support that if this is approved, we would enter into an orderly annexation joint resolution, secure the right-of-way, get it into the city, and then construct the road. The township has some extreme worries relative to if the road is not reconstructed. It's a township road now.
Yeah.
It would probably be subject to some high levels of commercial traffic that they just do not have the resources to really maintain a road under those circumstances. So they are very much in favor of getting this over into the city jurisdiction.
And one final question I have is, any of this area that is now under this project, was it ever in Green Acres? I don't know if you would know that. We probably don't need to go there today. So, any other Representative Garofalo?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative, thanks for being a good sport earlier. I didn't mean to... Hopefully I didn't scare your testifiers by starting off with a little...
No, you just scared me.
Okay. Is there any local opposition to the bill you're having today or any that you're aware of?
No, there has been no opposition expressed.
Thank you. Mm-hmm.
Representative Winchevsky.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I don't want to completely... I was trying to get some communication from Ms. Dalton there, but maybe we'll just try to figure it out on the record here. And maybe you can remember, Mr. Chair, I'm trying to remember why this, not this proposal, why the original proposal passed in 07. And I'm wondering if it was Senator Day brought it, came, do you remember, Mr. Chair, if this came through the House? Or if it was a conference committee agreement from the Senate in 07.
Representative Winchevsky, I cannot remember, and I don't know if Ms. Dalton would happen to remember exactly the background.
Madam Chair, I don't think the House tax bill, as it came through the House, actually had any local sales taxes that year. I think they all came from the Senate.
Well, Mr. Chair, I'm just trying to...
Representative Winchevsky.
Nothing with any of you here. I'm just trying to think this through. So, if it happened in 07, looking at it, if it happened in 07, was this in the 06
yes.
tax? Okay, so that's why. So now we know who to blame.
We need to know that.
I'm cranky and would have been Chair Cranky and Chair Holgemiller? I think so. Okay, so I'm just trying to get the history here. And it looks like you're just changing a transportation issue for a transportation issue. I just want you to know I don't support local option sales taxes for transportation, period. That's not, in my mind, what they should be used for, but you've already got it. So you're just looking to say the road has been moved. So I guess that there's probably not an issue with that. But I was just trying to understand how this ever came through. Was this Representative Ruth still a few years back, or... Does anyone have the history?
To my
Representative Cass,
that it was that it was Mr. Chair, Representative Ruth, and Senator Day. Yeah.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
It's good to kind of through, I think, you know, once you have it, it's, people aren't going to try to undo it necessarily, but I just was trying to understand if, how this came to be. So thank you for that.
Thank you. Any questions from the members before we... Is there anyone in the audience that would like to testify for or against House File 349? If not, Representative Kath, any closing comments?
No, I thank you very much for the opportunity to be here and for the understanding of lack of truth on my behalf.
Well, thank you very much. I appreciate the testifiers being here and the documents here. There's a lot of good documents that a person can look at, and I appreciate having all of that. So thank you very much. And Representative Mallory will renew his motion to lay over House File 349 for possible inclusion into the Property Tax Division report. Thank you.
Thank you, members.
At this time, we have some guests before we hear our next bill. We have a group of ninth graders from Sampson Park. I'd like to welcome you all to our Property Tax Division as you learn about government here in action. And Representative Dietrich, is this your members from your district?
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, thank you. Yes, this is my district, Sampson Park High School. And one of the students up there in the blue shirt is my son, Brett.
Now, that's very good.
And I will, Mr. Chair, I just want to point out that he's not wearing what I asked him to wear today. I asked him to dress up. This is the best he could do.
Representative Dietrich, he looks very impressive back there, so I will say. So,
Representative Dietrich, do you have any embarrassing childhood stories about your son you'd like to share with our classmates today?
Or that's what I asked me for not know.
No, I'm going to be visiting with the kids later, and we're going to have a little birthday party for Abe Lincoln.
Very good. Very good. So.
Treats. Forgot the treats, but I didn't.
Very good. Well, welcome. I'm glad you're here watching some of this Property Tax Division. We now will move to House File 590, and Representative Breinert, welcome. And do we have a motion for House File 590? Representative Roffler moves to lay over House File 590 for possible inclusion in the division report. Representative Breinert, if you would please present your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm here today on behalf of the City of Mankato, and this is a very minor change to a provision that was passed last session. It doesn't in any way affect the tax elements of this statute. We're simply asking to remove the words attached to the Mankato Civic Center, which occur twice in the bill. And I have with me today our Assistant City Manager, Tanya Ante, who will make a brief statement and would be glad to answer any questions the committee might have.
Very good.
Thank you, Representative Breinert. Chairman Marquardt and committee members, as Representative Breinert had indicated, this is a technical change that we are requesting. And what this will do is will afford us site flexibility as we continue through the...
Your name also,
oh,
please.
I apologize. Tanya Ante, okay. Assistant to the City Manager. And this will afford us site flexibility as we proceed through the preliminary site, preliminary design process. And will be a tool as we compare construction costs of various sites to ensure that we do meet our project budget. If there's any questions that the committee may have, I can answer those at this time.
Questions?
And thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd just like to say that this isn't the first time I've testified before the committee.
So the project right now, at one time you thought it was going to be attached, and now it's not going to be. Is that pretty much it? Somehow the project changed a little bit?
It still could be attached. We just want the flexibility to, and I apologize, I did not address correctly. This is my first time testifying. No, I did not bring trees. Chairman Marquardt, we just want the flexibility to look at all options as we proceed. Through attachment to the Civic Center, it could be feasible. we are, there would need to be a great deal of soil corrections, and additionally there may be an opportunity for private development to occur in the area. So we don't want to constrict ourselves and just look at all options of the portfolio moving forward.
Very good. Representative Reiner.
Yes, Mr. Chair, just to add to that, originally it looked like there was an obvious site that was contiguous and attachable, and on further exploration by the Planning Commission, that site has difficulties. And so now the planning team is looking at a range of options, which still include that site, but we're trying to be proactive here and give flexibility to the process.
Thank you. Anyone in the audience that would care to speak for or against House File 590? Not any other questions or comments from the Representative Scott.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to know if the support of the community is behind you on this one. If you've heard back.
Ms. Angie?
Chairman Marquardt and committee members and Representative Scott, I believe I can apologize, I can't see your name tag. As the sales tax provision had moved forward last year, extending the use of sales tax to 2025, there was a provision in that bill allowing a reverse referendum that was not pursued by our community. I can indicate that our community is supportive of the Civic Center and the economic impact that it has brought to the region.
Representative Scott.
Even if this arena doesn't end up being attached to the Civic Center?
Ms. McKenzie.
Chairman Marquardt and Representative Scott and community members, yes, and we are looking, and within the site, we're not only looking at construction costs, but also looking at connectivity still to the Civic Center. That could be through transportation nodes. It can be through programming, maximizing the use of space. The motto of our Civic Center, and specifically the arena and the partnership with MSU, being a state and local partnership, we feel that this is a model that should be pursued in other areas, and we're looking at using that same model and applying it to this project.
Thank you. Okay. Representative
Reiner. Yes, Mr. Chair. Representative Scott, just to give a further, background on community support, our community had a very broad visioning process called Envision 2020 with between 150 and 200 community members involved in the vision for this. Riverfront Renaissance was a part of that, so there's very broad community support for the project.
Mr. Chairman,
Representative Garofalo.
Mr. Chairman and Representatives, with regards to that, is there, no, I guess I went to Mankato, so, and I remember voting in favor of this because we wanted D1 hockey there and stuff like that. Is there any, part of the purpose of this is downtown renewal effort that we did not, there's a lot of development in Mankato was taking place out at River Hills Mall, that things were going up on Madison Avenue. It was kind of gutting the downtown. And since then, it's been from the times I've been back in Mankato, it's been a pretty big success. Is there more of an effort to envision of steering it towards the downtown area? Or do we want, we're going to go up in the skyline and something up there? Can you talk a little bit about that?
Representative Bryan.
Mr. Chair, Representative Garofalo. Actually, there are two facilities specifically mentioned under this attached phrase. One is the Women's Hockey Exposition Center, and the other is the theater building, and different locations are being looked at for both of those. And for both of them, there are downtown sites, and the theater has only downtown sites proposed. The Hockey Exposition Center has alternative sites, which include a site more closer to the university, but between downtown and the university. The university is only maybe 5 miles from the downtown area, as you well know.
I recall walking it a couple of times.
Mr. Chairman, to add to what Representative Blainart had said, coming from Envision 2020, which she had referenced, in addition to the city-adopted City Center Renaissance Plan, even if the facility would be located closer to the university, we would make sure that part of the facility whether it's through transportation linkages, we're really providing that connectivity to the downtown as our downtown is the hub.
Thank you. Hearing nothing further, Representative Rossler renews her motion to lay over House File 590 for possible inclusion into the division report. Thank you very much. Our last and final bill of the day is House File 686. Representative Lincheski, and we all know this is not her first time before this committee, so no truths are warranted at this point.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
You may proceed, Madam Chair.
Mr. Chair, if I may move, first I'd ask Mr. Carlson to join me to talk about the bill, but if I may move House File 686 and then also move the A1 amendment to get it in order, I'd like
very
to
good.
Go.
We have, Representative Lincheski has moved 686 and also moved the amendment. So let's act on the amendment, if we can, the A1 amendment. Any discussion on that to get things into its proper form? If not, I'm going to vote. Take a vote on A1. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed say nay. The motion is adopted. Please proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members. And I thought it would be best to just have Mr. Carlson. You all, I believe, know Mr. Carlson, who represents really all the cities in the state of Minnesota via the League of Minnesota Cities. But to just talk a little bit about the bill. But members, what this bill is really about is giving cities, counties as well, and towns, the ability to do debt if they are stuck in a situation where they now don't have the money that they've already committed to spending. This really, I think, was prompted by the unallotment situation where we had cities and counties and towns at the very end of last year, at the very end of their calendar year, and then they lost some of their anticipated revenue from the state and they were in a bind. So Mr. Carlson can explain, you know, who they would anticipate would use this if we were to pass this. And the, stepping back from the policy, Mr. Chair, if you decide to include this in your division report or not, or the full committee does or not, is to think of it as another tool for the local units of government to deal with what's already happened to them and is still coming. I think all of us know, no matter what our philosophy is here, that the local units of government are under incredible stress right now, and I don't think anyone anticipates that that's not going to get worse as we go through calendar year 09. So this is one tool to help them get some relief, and it's for committee consideration to think about if this would be something we'd want to provide them as we go forward.
Thank you very much, Mr. Carlson.
Mr. Chair, members, my name is Gary Carlson. I'm with the League of Minnesota Cities. I want to thank Representative Lincheski for offering this bill today, and actually also to Joel Michael for helping draft this so we have the appropriate caveats in the bill, and also the Department of Revenue. Eric Ouellette is here, and he's also looked at this bill and was part of the amendment that was already offered today to fulfill some of the concerns of the department. As Representative Lincheski indicated, this bill was really generated by the December 2008 unallotment cuts that were imposed on cities and counties. And it also anticipates that we very likely, as Representative Lincheski indicated, are facing additional cuts yet this budget year for cities and counties and townships. The unallotment occurred right at the very end of our previous fiscal year and right after we certified our property tax levies for the 2009 calendar year. So cities and counties and towns had little ability to respond immediately to those unallotments. One of the ideas that we actually first surfaced was an idea of possibly allowing local governments to recertify their property tax levies in early January. That is rather unprecedented, and I think it would have created some problems for the counties, and we decided that was probably not a feasible alternative given the timing of the unallotments and the early part of the legislative session. As a result, we came up with this idea as a secondary or as a backup way for us to make sure that no local unit of government runs out of funds so that they don't really have a financial problem that was unforeseen by the unallotment or by the possibility of aid cuts coming up yet this legislative session. The bill is modeled after current law. There is a provision in Minnesota Statutes 412.751 that allows Plan B cities, council manager cities, to already use a very similar borrowing technique if there is an unexpected loss of revenues. So really the genesis of this is actually in Chapter 412.751. We expanded it to Chapter 471 as the bill is currently drafted at the suggestion of Joel Michael to make sure that this was also available to counties and townships as well. Basically, there's three sections of the bill. The first section allows local units of government to increase their proposed levy to cover the cost of the debt service on emergency debt certificates. Under current state law, once we certify a preliminary levy on September 15th, cities and counties and townships cannot raise that preliminary levy except for a few extenuating circumstances. This would add an additional extenuating circumstance that would allow an increase in the proposed levy to cover a potential loss of state aid. Section 2 allows the unit of government to issue the certificates of indebtedness without voter approval. Given that this would be an unforeseen loss of revenue, we thought rather than have to go to the voters to go to a referendum, it really made only sense to allow the city to do this without voter approval. So we have a carve-out in Section 2 from that state requirement. And then finally, Section 3 is really the core of the bill. And I want to just draw your attention to the fact that this is a two-part test. First of all, the revenues of the local unit of government would have to be reduced for unforeseen circumstances. But also, the second part of the test is that the local unit of government cannot meet expenses because of those losses of revenue. So there would have to be a two-part finding before these debt certificates could be issued. And we think we've built significant restrictions in that will allow flexibility, but will make sure that this use would not be overused, I should say, under the bill. The amendment that was offered, let me just briefly explain that amendment. Last year during the omnibus tax bill negotiations, the League of Cities and the counties did argue for a special levy authority to cover unallotment should it occur. And I know many people thought we were kind of crazy back in June talking about, or May talking about unallotment. It actually did happen. Mr. Ouellette from the Department of Revenue indicated that we could have a little bit of a double counting of this authority, so Joel Michael did draft this amendment to try to prevent a double levying to cover the cost of certificates of indebtedness and for the loss of the aid. So I think this amendment does cover that. Mr. Ouellette did whisper to me he wants to think about this a little bit more before this bill is actually sent on its merry way, but we will still work with the Department of Revenue to make sure the adequate restrictions are in place. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well,
thank you. Any questions? Representative Loeffler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and to Mr. Carlson. I think this is a responsible way to deal with an unforeseen circumstance, but are you aware, is there a market for these? I mean, you just keep hearing in the news that the credit markets for almost anything, including government-backed bonds, is pretty squirrely still. And do you have a sense of how many cities might be at risk if they weren't able to implement this?
Mr. Chair, Representative Loeffler, great question. First, let me start at the back end. I hope nobody has to use this authority. I hope that the aid cuts are not so extensive or so unforeseen that anybody really has to use this authority. But that said, come June, July, when hopefully you're all gone from here, we have a city that runs into a problem, I would like to have a safety net in place. As to the marketability or the ability of cities to market a certificate, I guess I might defer to Joel Michael on that. I think the credit markets are loosening up to a great degree. I think compared to last October, November, when the markets were very tight, we may have had a problem, but I think it may have loosened up a little bit. But I would defer to Joel to maybe react.
Mr. Mike?
Mr. Chairman, Joel Michael, House Research. I'm not an expert on municipal bond markets, obviously, but the two things to point out. One is to reiterate what Gary just said, the municipal bond market has loosened up quite a bit. I just saw an article last night that the difference between treasuries and municipal bonds, right now treasuries are still paying higher interest than tax-exempt bonds, which is a very unusual circumstance. But 2 months ago it was like 125 basis point difference, and now it's only 15 basis points. So that difference has narrowed dramatically, which is showing that the credit markets are sort of coming back to their senses on this. So that's the one thing, just to reiterate, I think what Gary was saying, that I think that it's a little bit looser now, or better circumstance than it was. But secondly, and I think more importantly, these are very short-term instruments, and so that will cause investors to be much more comfortable with them. And secondly, they're very secure in the sense that the city or the county or the town is pledging to levy taxes in the next year or 2 years to pay these off, and so it's pretty sure that they'll actually get the revenue back from it. And so I would think even when the credit markets are very uncertain and tight, these might be the kinds of instruments that you could sell. Whereas if you're trying to sell a longer-term bond, and particularly one that's dependent upon revenues, that would be probably more dicey.
Representative Loeffler, any follow-up?
No.
Representative Detmer.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman, and to the testifier. Has this been done before, and how did it work out for the municipalities?
Mr. Carlson.
Chair Mark Clark, Representative Detmer. To my knowledge, the Chapter 412 language that this was modeled after has not been used. I don't know that it has been used in the years that it's been in place. Our concern is that the extraordinary circumstances that we're in today, and the fact that we will likely see some of the largest aid reductions that we've ever seen, could require that something like this be used by a local unit of government. Again, I haven't had anybody actually approach me saying that we need this authority today, but again, when we get to July or August, I would rather have a safety net in place that would allow a city to actually use a tool like this rather than to have to come back and maybe actually ask for a special session or something to help a city out with a debt problem.
And Representative Carlson, or Mr. Carlson, Representative Linsky, this is unique. I mean, we could be looking at two kind of big cuts, an unallotment and then a budget cut after you've already set your levy for 2009. So in a way, it's almost like two hits on 2009, which I think, as Mr. Carlson said, could result in July and August where they look at things and say, oh, we're going to be quite a bit short. One question I have, with all the foreclosures and all this, could this also deal with a reduction, like tax delinquency, if your tax revenues are coming in much less than expected because of foreclosures, and would this also trigger that?
Representative Marquardt, or Chair Marquardt, yes, the language in the bill does allow for an unanticipated loss of revenues, and it certainly could be used in a situation where foreclosures or lack of payment of property taxes is occurring to such a degree that the city or the county or the school would not, or the township might not be able to meet its expenditure needs. And in one other case that I know has come up recently, the city of Cambridge a couple of years ago had a property value that was challenged. It was a portion of a hospital that was also a clinic, and it was a tax exemption issue. The court battle went on for 3 or 4 years. The city was forced at the last minute to reimburse money that had been paid. And that kind of event would also be, the city could actually use this authority for that type of a situation as well.
Very good. Other questions? Representative Garofalo.
Mr. Chairman, or members of staff, for the LGA and market value homestead credit payments, when do those go out? How are those metered out?
Ms. Dalton.
Mr. Chair, Representative Garofalo, they go out in July, and then they're got in two payments, one in the middle of July and one at the very end of December, like December 28th.
And Mr. Chairman,
Representative Garofalo.
And that's for, there's no delineation between LGA and market value homestead credit, those are the same time frame?
I believe they're paid at the same time.
Thank you. Very good. Anyone here in the audience that would care to testify for or against House File 686? If not, Representative Linsky, renews her motion to lay over House File 686 as amended for possible inclusion in the division report. Any last comments?
Just an option to keep thinking about.
Sounds like more flexibility for cities and so forth. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
We have some guests here I'd like to introduce also. We have four members from the district that I represent that are part of the Red River Valley Emerging Leadership Program. I think that's the University of Minnesota Extension Office. But we have two couples, one from Wilkin County and one from Clay County, and they are leaders in their communities that are chosen by their peers.
as people have already demonstrated leadership within their rural communities, and then they participate in this program, which involves training and so forth, which is a couple days down here at the Capitol, and then with the idea we'll continue to keep our rural communities vital. And just one thing of interest, as I congratulate all four of these, is that one of those four is a former student of mine, a 1994 grad from Dulles Grinnell Felton, Chad Johnson. Everyone raise your hand. And so, and in my class, we have presidential election, a mock presidential election. I have to go through a whole campaign, a whole work. He won that election back in 1994. Representative Garofalo. So.
You said these people live in your district?
Yes.
Mr. Johnson, you're interested in running for state representative?
Yeah. Maybe. Don't answer that question. Do not answer that question. So congratulations, first of all, for being part of the program and for being here. So it's a wonderful program and some great leaders here. So any of the past of minutes before we go on, so do I hear a motion to approve of the February 11th minutes?
Almost.
Representative Garofalo moves. Hearing debate, hearing none, I will take the vote. All those in favor of approving these minutes, say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, say nay. The motion is carried. Anything else we need to do for the good of the order? We'll meet at a regular time next week at 1 o'clock. Oh, we meet 1 o'clock today at the Joint Tax, Property Tax Division, Health and Human Services, Policy and Finance, to look at maintenance of effort. So that'll be an interesting meeting. We're adjourned.